This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is on vacation this week. South Boston is a neighborhood in transition. A case in point, the Old Colony housing project in South Boston's lower end is being demolished and redeveloped. Anthony, before he left, visited Old Colony recently with someone who grew up there and found that while the old buildings are coming down in the neighborhood, many ghosts remain.
Michael Patrick McDonald lives in Brooklyn now, but the author and activist keeps returning to the Old Colony housing project in South Boston, where he grew up and where earth movers and construction crews are transforming his old neighborhood.
The only thing that's recognizable right now on the street are these trees. I mean, we climbed those trees, you know.
In his book, All Souls, A Family Story from Southie, McDonald tells the story of this neighborhood and of growing up in Old Colony. The red brick buildings are being torn down now, replaced by attractive townhouse apartments for low-income residents. It seems like a big improvement, but McDonald can't let go of the past so easily. In All Souls, he writes that this was the best place in the world to grow up in, even as he laid bare its culture of criminal silence, of gangs, drugs, and addiction, of a world in which three of his brothers died well before their time. So there are powerful memories that draw McDonald back to this spot where his childhood home once stood, now a construction site, a pile of dirt and rubble. Among those memories, the busing riots that gripped this neighborhood so violently when he was a boy.
And this really was where some of the worst busing battles happened between residents and police. We would all come running out of the project, line these streets as the buses were coming. To be honest, it was exhilarating to us kids. I don't want to say fun, but it was, you know, there's adrenaline involved. You're 8 years old, and it's us against the world. What's more exciting than that for a kid, you know?
You know, it's funny you say that, us against the world. There's so many huge themes in the writing that you've done about this world, mm-hmm. and that's one of them.
Right.
Us against the world, right?
Right.
I mean, this sort of siege mentality that
yeah,
exists
there was
in
a
here.
Siege mentality here. And the thing about it is that was a two-way street. That was something that was progressive world really targeted this place as the bastion of white supremacy that needs to be broken without really paying much attention to the fact that we were already broken.
So looking at the rubble and the dirt and behind it, new development being put in place, how does it make you feel?
It's a lot of mixed emotions, but the most striking thing for me, you know, you can see straight through to the water at Carson Beach. You know, there's the Atlantic right over there. You could be in the project all day and not really be aware. And I watched this place come down. I was coming here every day as the buildings were coming down. One time I was traveling here from New York all the way here. I was praying that if I could see one thing, it would be our door. I thought I'd see it in the rubble in the building that was torn down, because you know, you see all the fences and doors and things. And I got here, and our building was half torn off, the guts of my mother's room all out, and the door was still on the hinges, and it was the only door on the hinges. And I talked to the construction guys, and they said that first thing they did was get rid of all the doors and windows.
But your door was somehow still hanging there.
Apartment 396. So it just felt so auspicious to me that I asked if I could keep it, and I have that door now.
Why was it important to have that door?
I didn't even know that it was important to have that door, but seeing that number, apartment 396, the green door, you know, there's a saying, you can never go home again. Well, for people who grew up poor, it's even more true, because for us, most of the places we lived, schools we went to, the churches we went to, are not going to be there. Oftentimes, unfortunately, they're turned into luxury condos. That's not the case in Old Colony, and I hope it'll remain not the case in Old Colony, that this will be affordable housing for families like my family of whatever racial and ethnic background. But unfortunately, across the street, you can see St. Augustine's Church. That church is where my family was baptized, where I received my first communion, where we carried three brothers' caskets down the front steps. And that is slated to be luxury condos. And that...
Oh, that must be awfully painful.
That's way more painful than what I see going on here with Old Colony. To us, it is a sacred space. And it would be amazing to me. You know, this neighborhood is still dealing with some of the highest substance abuse rates in the city of Boston, the highest overdose rates.
A lot of heroin.
Yeah, and I'd love to see If that church building could be anything useful to this community, it would be something that involves young people, job training, GED programs, substance abuse. But of course, none of that stuff is profitable. Like all of the things in poor people's lives, it's not really profitable until they want to sell off our property. It's funny to see this tattered Irish flag over there, left over from the old days.
Powerful memories.
Over there was our building, 8 Patterson Way, but across the street was where my brother Frankie lived, and he was a 4-time Golden Glove champion boxer who got involved in an armored car heist and was shot in the crossfire and died in that heist. Before the buildings came down, about a week before they started coming down, I had stuck in and spent some time in our old apartment. Wow. Then I went into Frankie's apartment.
So by then the buildings were obviously empty. And
they were emptied, and they were all complete. The street was a ghost town. There was nobody here. So it was just me alone on Patterson Way in our family's apartment, which was exactly the same. I even found this picture that we had on the wall back then of Our Lady of Perpetual Help.
God, that must have been incredibly sad, eerie.
Behind us here is the building where my sister Kathy went off the roof. She ended up in a coma for 6 months.
And when you say went off the roof, this was a fight over drugs with her then boyfriend.
Yeah,
right?
At the time she was fighting, according to the neighbors, she was fighting with him over some pills. But to this day, she's severely brain damaged and just talks to herself and chain smokes. And so she's a casualty of, you know, the Whitey Bulger days, really.
This neighborhood was known as the poorest concentration of whites in the nation. Did you think of yourselves back then as being among the poorest in the nation when you were growing up here?
No, I mean, we didn't even think of ourselves as poor. It wasn't until I was a teenager that I started to realize that. I mean, I knew that we were on welfare, and I knew it was a little odd. As a kid, I would observe, you know, that it was odd that we're all on food stamps and everybody's making fun of, you know, black people on food stamps when we're all white and we're on food stamps. So there was a kind of denial that, again, I think has a little bit to do with being poor and white.
Why was there such a dramatic sense of separation around that issue as opposed to kinship?
I think busing created bigger divisions than there were. The way it was implemented in Boston, and again, I'm speaking as a progressive, as someone who loves diversity, but the way it was implemented in this city to pit the poorest whites and the poorest blacks against each other, to pit Roxbury and Southie against each other, rather than giving all of us access to better schools. I mean, Southie High had a lower percentage of kids graduating to attend college than any of the other schools.
To what extent was the physical structure of these kinds of places part of that sort of walling off from the outside world?
Yeah, I think that the way housing projects were, these kind of labyrinthian mazes, made them inward-looking. I think that's the goal of some of the new development, is to make this community more outward-looking.
Which we can see right behind you, and they're quite a difference.
And so I think it's admirable that that's the direction of building here, but there are a lot of really deep problems here still to this day that have to do with poverty, that have to do with addiction and so forth, that can't be fixed by architecture. Also, this renovation of Old Colony Project is going on hand in hand with the Whitey Bulger trials that we're expecting to happen in June. Those trials are also dealing with the past in a very limited way.
How so?
Because it's all been portrayed as one bad guy who killed 19 people. Rather than it. There were systemic problems that we don't want to happen again, not only in this community, but in communities across the country. We've also limited the victims to 19 people when, in fact, an entire generation was wiped out in this community. My older brothers, my sister, their friends, all the people that weren't the victims of direct mob hits or direct Whitey Bulger bullets were either crippled or died as a result of his drug trade. So the type of thing that we would need is never going to happen. That would be something like truth commissions. That's never going to happen. Something that would deal with the larger conspiracy beyond one bad guy. Because one bad guy, I mean, he's going to be dead whether he goes to trial or not. He's going to be dead in a few years.
So the idea that there were a whole network of politicians, of all kinds of people associated.
All levels of law enforcement. But how can we get to tell the truth about all of that
Well, you've been advocating for that sort of an end to the silence for a long, long time. It seems like an awful lot of progress has been made, but still more needs to happen.
A lot of this stuff, whether it's the Whitey Bulger trials or even this renovation, a lot of it's too late for the population that I'm talking about, the population that was never on anyone's agenda, namely poor white people in South Boston. But the most we can hope for is that the kids growing up in this project now, what happened to my family, that could not possibly happen to them. That's the greatest thing we could possibly hope for in terms of change, rather than just surface changes and a very limited trial about one bad guy killing 19 people.
Michael Patrick McDonald, thanks so much for talking to me today. I'm very grateful.
Great, thanks.
Radio Boston co-host Anthony Brooks talking to Michael Patrick McDonald in South Boston. McDonald is the author of two memoirs, All Souls and Easter Sunday. You can read more about him and see some of his photographs of the demolition of the Old Colony Housing Project at radioboston.org. But for now, stick with us, because when we come back, the dark history of napalm that begins with a soccer field on fire at Harvard University. I'm Meghan Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.